Welcome to the Weekly Digest, a podcast by News 24, South Africa's most trusted news brand. Every Friday, we invite you into our studio to listen to conversations about some of the week's top stories. Mihlali Ntsabo is our host.
In today's episode, Kaya Koko, News 24's senior politics reporter, joins us in our Johannesburg studio to explain government's response to allegations of rand manipulation by several local and international banks. Specialist legal writer at News 24, Karen Morn, joins us on the line to discuss why the state failed to gather evidence on time for the 2.2 billion rand fraud case against Matsala Koko and his co-accused. And finally, on the lighter side, a new edition of News 24's digital magazine, Hello Weekend, drops this Saturday. Deputy Lifestyle Editor Kawunda Selusho takes us through some of the featured content. On Monday, the Minister in the Presidency, Khumbudzo Tshabeni, accused the private sector of trying to collapse government following accusations of rand fixing by 28 local and international banks.
We have maintained over the period that the performance of the rand and sometimes the performance of the economy has been manipulated by private sector who has no interest in the development of this country, who continue to engineer and do machination to make sure that the government collapses. That's why they also self-feed in the narrative that there's a collapsing state, there's a collapsing economy.
According to findings by the Competition Commission, between 2007 and 2013, these banks manipulated the exchange rate against the US dollar in their favor. While it is still not clear how much these banks profited from manipulating the rand, many South Africans are questioning the extent to which this saga has impacted their livelihoods. Only two banks, Citibank, a US financial services provider, and Standard Charter Bank from the UK, have admitted to the allegations and have agreed to pay a fine. Speaking at a post-cabinet briefing in Tshwane on Monday, Minister in the Presidency, Khumbudzo Tshabeni, called for those implicated to face consequences.
In terms of the work that is being done, the Competition Commission, Standard and Charter has agreed to testify against the other banks. So the follow-up question that you've said to say what is the role of Absa and other banks, it's not only one bank, Absa, there are other banks. At least now we're starting to have Standard and Charter going to form part of the witnesses in the prosecution so that we can have recourse. People cannot be left untouched because they wanted to collapse this country. There must be consequences, and there will be consequences.
Kaya Koko, senior politics reporter at News 24, is with me now to tell us more about the fallout. Kaya, I think many of us South Africans are still shocked by the news of the manipulation of the rand. Could you maybe perhaps briefly remind us what rand manipulation is and how about these local and international banks went about manipulating the rand?
Okay, so the Competition Commission, which is a constitutional Chapter 9 institution, is behind the investigation that between 2007 and 2013, 28 local and international banks waged in something called the rand-dollar exchange rate manipulation. So essentially, in a nutshell, that is certain currency investors or currency traders manufactured a position for the rand to depreciate against the dollar and then made money off of that.
Right.
So they bet against the rand doing poorly against the US dollar and incurred profits. That's the allegation from the Competition Commission. So far, Citibank, which is headquartered in the United States, has pleaded guilty. It was the first to plead guilty to these allegations. And recently we've seen Standard Chartered from the UK also pleading guilty, paying a 42.7 million rand fine and agreeing to assist the Competition Commission in the prosecution of the other implicated banks.
And of course, the South African government has since responded to these news. Earlier this week, we heard Minister in the Presidency, Kumuzo Chabeni, stating that the private sector was trying to collapse the South African government. Did she perhaps make any mention of whether the South African government was looking at repercussions?
Well, to quote her directly, she said there must be consequences and there will be consequences.
Right.
Those are direct quotes from her. Now, what that means, she didn't elaborate, but it's obvious that she took an adversarial stance towards the private sector.
Mm.
Business Unity South Africa's chief executive, Kes Kovadia, speaking to News 24, said that business is not trying to collapse the South African economy or the South African government. They're working hand in hand with government, including in infrastructure projects post-COVID pandemic, in trying to resuscitate the South African economy. So it'll be interesting to see how relations going forward. I mean, because she is a high-ranking minister. I mean, she's in the presidency, you know. And she's, I think, after in government, in the executive arm of government, after the president and the deputy president, you could see that she's third in line, you know, because she delivers cabinet statements. When she made these remarks about the private sector seeking to collapse government, she was giving a post-cabinet briefing. So the adversarial stance that she took will be interesting to watch going forward in the business government relations, private public partnership, to be more specific.
Right. And finally, do we at this point know, whether from government or even business as well, the extent of how the manipulation of the rand has affected the livelihoods of South Africans?
According to what is known as the Big Mac Index and other research, financial research institutions, the rand is undervalued significantly.
Mm-hmm.
You find people saying that the rand should be at around 10.90 for a US dollar,
mm-hmm.
where currently it's at 18.70, you know, give or take. So whether that has to do with a rand-dollar exchange manipulation or other factors, you know, the South African economy hasn't been performing well. Granted, there was a recession, and then following that, COVID. But, you know, we've scored a couple of own goals ourselves in macroeconomic policy. But with the current exchange rate where it is, you know, I would personally say that it's a factor of everything. You know, there are currency traders who are betting on a weak rand in order to make profits off it. However, there are issues with our macroeconomic policy and implementation of said policies that are putting South African economy on the back foot.
Kaya Gogo, senior politics reporter at News 24. The fraud and corruption case against former Eskom CEO Matsela Gogo and his co-accused was struck off the roll in the Middelburg Magistrates Court on Tuesday, this after delays caused by the state in proceeding with the trial. Gogo was accused of being at the center of a corrupt scheme which sought to help Swiss engineering firm ABB secure a lucrative 2.2 billion rand contract at the Kusile Power Station in Mpumalanga. The court said the state should bring the matter back with a letter from the National Director of Public Prosecutions confirming that the case is ready for trial. Karen Morn, News 24 specialist legal writer, is on the line to help us better understand the ruling. Karen, let's look at the affidavit by the lead investigator in the Matsela Gogo money laundering case that has now since been struck off the roll after Magistrate Stanley Jacobs said there were unreasonable delays by the state in moving forward with the trial. The affidavit details why there were delays in the trial, and this was primarily because of resource constraints and funding challenges. In detail, what were some of these constraints and financial challenges cited in the affidavit?
Well, essentially what the lead investigator said, and we can't name him because of security concerns about his safety,
mm-hmm.
but essentially what he's saying is that when this case was launched, there were search and seizure operations conducted against a number of the accused, including Matsela Gogo and his wife. that produced, I think, 19 different devices and huge amounts of data. I mean, I've heard something like 8 million documents. The magistrate in this case actually, you know, said it went into millions and millions of documents. And essentially what the investigator said is that in order to be able to analyze this properly, the ID, the investigating directorate, needed a data analyst and they needed a forensic accountant, auditor. And he has revealed that the ID's data analyst actually resigned in December last year, and it would take up until August for them actually to replace this person. So, I mean, beyond this case, there's obviously massive implications for other matters involving the ID. In addition, in terms of appointing the forensic accountant, it took them to August, I think the 23rd or the 25th of August, to appoint that forensic accountant. Now, they have done an in-depth flow of funds report by Bowman's, but that still hasn't been completed. And obviously, with a huge amount of data, you know, Jacob's understandably expressing a huge amount of concern about the state's assurances that no, we'll get this done, it'll be finalized. Given the fact that, you know, we've heard in this affidavit that up until very recently there were only ever two investigators involved in investigating this massive case that obviously focuses on alleged financial malfeasance, corruption, and the state says it wants to charge racketeering related to Eskom and Marcelo Cocco's time there as CEO. So it's really a thing about an overwhelming amount of data and a seeming lack of skills to deal with that. And then, of course, these incredibly overwhelming financial bureaucracies involved in appointing people to do that kind of job.
Right. Karen, let's go back to the appointment process of the ID's replacement of the lead data analyst. But was the process a prioritized appointment? Because I think that's the first question that comes to my mind after reading your story, is that if the lead data analyst had resigned in December of 2022 and the process basically took 8 months, do we at this point then know if perhaps the ID was working on prioritizing these appointments?
Well, what the lead investigator says is that, unfortunately, there's certain NPA prescripts that have to be followed, and this delays things. But we've seen this again and again and again. And it's so frustrating, Mihlali, because, you know, people accused of corruption and malfeasance are very sophisticated in what they do and how they do it. We've seen that happening more and more with cash payments, money laundering, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And, you know, the state needs properly skilled people to be able to investigate them. And having sat in the New Lane state capture case where we saw the state go down in flames because of their inadequate, I would argue, financial analysis of Gupta accounts. You know, they were trying to make a case of money laundering in that particular matter, and their analysts, bless their hearts, fell horribly short of even making a basic level of bringing a basic level of evidence of that in that court. And of course, we know that case ended in a Section 174 discharge. The accused weren't even required to defend themselves. We know the state is appealing there, but you know, having sat in that case, it wasn't a good picture. And we have a situation where the state is trying to deal with highly, you know, sophisticated levels of alleged corruption, financial malfeasance, but they're essentially fighting that battle with their hands tied around, tied behind their backs and blindfolds on. And my frustration, and Marcelo Cocco actually points this out in his affidavit, he says, this IO, this investigating officer, is saying all these things, but, you know, Andrea Johnson tells News 24 that, you know, my arrest is evidence of what can happen when the ID is actually resourced. So what is it? Like, what is it? Are they resourced? Are they not resourced? And we have had this rhetoric coming from the NPA, trust us, we know what we're doing, the days of impunity are over, but we're yet to see a single conviction in any of these cases. The only real cases that they've managed in were, I think, you know, the Dudumieni, which was if they couldn't get a conviction in that case, God help all of us. But the high-level corruption cases, not a single one. And I think that, you know, as Stephen Curtis pointed out, and David Stady Maverick, or I think it was Rebecca Davis, the level of corruption prosecutions that have actually resulted in convictions has dropped dramatically. There were more convictions under Sean Abrams than there have been among the new leadership, which is assuring South Africans that the days of impunity are over. And I think that that's a serious problem, especially for a society that is corruption ravaged and exhausted as we are.
The case has been struck off the roll, but that doesn't mean that's the end to it, right?
Well, essentially what the state can do is they can then, you know, they will be able to reinstate the charges. When a matter is struck from the roll, this has happened. It happened in Jacob Zuma's case, I think in around 2007, the case was reinstated. It happened in the Frieda Dairy Project case under Sean Abrams. That case only reinstated, you know, under Shamila Batoy, and the trial is due to go ahead next year. But the magistrate has said for that to happen, Shamila Batoy will have to write a letter essentially assuring the court that the case is actually trial ready before it will be prepared to reinstate this prosecution.
Karen Morn, specialist legal writer at News24. And as we look forward to the weekend, News24 deputy lifestyle editor Kawunda Selisho is in studio to give us a taste of what to expect on Hello Weekend. Okay, welcome back to the Weekly Digest.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, in News24 Live's fashion, it's that time of the week again where you guys give us the latest edition of Hello Weekend. So what can our audience expect
this upcoming cover? Well, we have submissions from a large contingent of our team this week and a lot of first-hand experiences. So people can look forward to seeing things from our team's perspective. From me, I'm not only looking at how Crocs became cool, I'm looking at how they became South African. So I don't know if you know the little designs and accessories that you put on your Crocs.
Yes,
they're called
yes.
gibbets. So the gibbets for December are getting a South African update with words like sis, lekker, haibo, all that jazz.
You know, the funniest thing, I actually never understood that wave. I even Crocs as well. I don't know. It just never stuck to me.
That's part of the article because I too was like you, and now I think I have about 5 pairs.
Hopefully, after reading the article, I'll be convinced to.
Well, they also have some elevated designs that they released for summer. Nice. So you know how they call the classic one the Crocs Clog. That was the first design. They've updated their designs. They have sandals. They have platforms. They have different things for everyone because they're trying to win you guys over. And for winter, they even have fleece-lined ones that keep your feet warm. So there's something for everybody. They're really trying to convert you guys.
All right. No, I'm looking forward to that because, like I said, sometimes you do have FOMO, but yeah, for me, it was just like, I don't know. I don't understand. Also, I'm a closed shoes person.
I hear you. And then from Tech and Trends, William Brederode recently attended a gourmet experience. I think it's a 4-course dinner. And he had food prepared by someone who completed an apprenticeship under Gordon Ramsay.
Ooh.
And they spoke about how seasonal cooking is big in the UK. And now that he's come to South Africa to work and live here, he's looking to change how our industry approaches and views seasonal cooking and eating. So William will be giving us that. Discovery recently revamped or like upgraded their OR Tambo Airport Lounge just in time for December.
Oh, nice.
So Maria Pillay got to have a very great travel experience just to see firsthand what it will be like, what those changes are like, and whether or not it's worth your money. And then lastly, from Kita Metsimako, we have a cover feature speaking to Rilo Vohile Mabotja. So I'm not sure if you know her, but she's a radio host, producer, mommy, TV presenter, industry unicorn, basically, because she does it all. In addition to being in front of the camera, she produces some of the biggest live events that we've seen, like the SAFTAs and the Miss SA pageant. Yes, so Kitu spoke to her about all that and more. So that's what you can look forward to in Hello Weekend.
And of course, you can find that and more on Hello Weekend, dropping this Saturday. Kawunda Selisho, Deputy Lifestyle Editor at News24. Other stories you can find on news24.com include: young voters show up. 78% of new registrations were citizens aged between 16 and 29, says the IEC. And Treasury puts dramatic plan for preferential procurement on the table. That's all we have for now. Do join us next Friday for the next installment of the Weekly Digest.